many times have you said, I'm not ready yet? Whether it's entering a new real estate market or leading a team, we wait, we hesitate, and we hold back. But here's the truth. Confidence isn't something you magically feel before you take action. It's something you build by taking action. Today, I'm sitting down with Lila Jones, a leadership expert who spent decades helping women lead with clarity and courage. We're diving into what keeps women stuck, what confident women do differently, and how you can start leading with confidence today. Welcome to the Invest Her podcast. I'm Liz Fairclough.
And I am your co-host, Andressa Gadelli.
So Lila, so many women, powerful women, they hold back from taking bold action because they just don't feel ready. What is the real cost of waiting to feel ready?
Well, you can imagine you'll never do anything. Most things that are worth doing, you'll never feel ready for. If you think about an example of that, if any of you are mothers, who's ever really ready to have a child? You're never really ready until that baby is here and in your arms and you're looking at him or her. And then you're like, okay. And you grow into that readiness. Think about relationships that you've had. A lot of times you don't think you're ready for a relationship, but you grow into that. And so that courage, that act of knowing and believing, and hey, I've got enough details to make a decision and launching, is a difference maker. Typically, our limiting beliefs stand in the way, but we can't wait until we have every detail to act.
I love that. And you're absolutely right. I know for myself, when I became a mother, I think it took me 10 years to really make that decision because not because I was scared or for a variety of reasons, I didn't know if I was ready for that role in my life because I was ambitious. I was an entrepreneur. So I love that example. I think for so many women listening, they're probably saying in their heads, yes, but, or should I say yes, and I do that in my personal life, the relationship, the, motherhood, if that's a route that they've taken. Why does that not always show up on the business side in the professional sense? Or am I just making a complete, hypothesis here?
So I think that a lot of times you're right. We can be really, really like bold and make and take risks in our personal lives, but then it comes to our professional lives and we hold back. And typically, again, it's because of a narrative that's in our head. It's not our words. It's not what we feel, but it's something that we've believed to be true. Oftentimes, you may think of things that you heard when you were growing up. I know when I was growing up, my grandfather used to say, don't get too big for your britches. He was older. Or you may have heard, your parents giving a consistent narrative of, oh, well, I'm not good with money, or, oh, your mom's not good with money, or whatever it may be. Or perhaps you're even in a workplace that's very male dominated and you just don't feel the confidence because it seems as though you're always going outside of yourself to be able to interact with everybody. And so you're not being authentic. And all those things make it such that in that environment, you don't have the confidence, but at home where you feel more in control, you do. And that's where I think the disconnect comes from.
Ooh, that is very true. So what is one way to move through that for the woman listening?
The best way to move through anything is to act. Now, I know that probably seems so simple, but it is true. And so people might say, well, how do I build the muscle for action, right? If you think about it, you've built a muscle to check your phone every day. There was a time when phones didn't exist. Depending on how old you are, people remember those first phones that nobody could use because they were so big and it was like, $20 a minute to be able to call. And it wasn't our knee-jerk reaction to going to our
phone. Phones were enormous, by the way, too.
They were enormous, right? It was like a brick phone. And yet now one of the first things that we do when we wake up is what? Check the phone, because we've built a muscle for that. We've done it repetitively. So subconsciously, our mind just does that automatically. So why not use your confidence and acting in the same way? Are there ways that you can start to build that action muscle day to day? And one of the things you can consider is simply taking action right away. There's little things that come up, answering an email or doing something that you need to do that you push off and you procrastinate on. Very simply, you could decide, I'm not going to procrastinate today. If something comes up, I'm going to act on it. And those are the ways that you can start to build that everyday muscle and habit around acting. Then when you need that in the boardroom or at work, it's on the ready.
Yeah, it's like we always say, small, actionable, micro steps lead us to the bigger decisions. you know, and it happens every day in our lives. So looking for opportunities to take those small actions. You worked with countless leaders, right, at Microsoft, at Google. So what did you see? Did you see a difference between women that just took that action, you know, so to speak, were confident in the workplace versus women who were not? What did you see? What were some of the trends that you can share with us?
Great question. The difference was the desire to please versus the desire to succeed.
Ooh.
The women who were all about their careers and taking the next step did not need acknowledgement from others, did not need to be confirmed by others, but simply were there and had mission and purpose. And they were relentless and non-apologetic about that, tended to continue to move forward towards what they were looking for. The people who were waiting for permission or waiting for someone to ask them or waiting until they felt comfortable typically didn't. And that's a large disparity. It's a huge difference. It's a huge difference in outcomes. And so that's the difference. People were waiting, desire to please, needed everything to feel comfortable, versus the ones who were like, okay is good enough. C's get degrees, let's move.
Say that again, the last part.
C's get degrees, let's move, let's go.
Gotcha, C's. That's great. That makes a lot of sense. So when you saw women that were more pleasers, and I don't think that's unique. I know that from my own life, right? And the desire to please, you know, whether it's a personality trait, whether we learn that from seeing other generations within our own family. I don't think that's uncommon for a lot of women working through the pleasing versus just boldness, to be honest. So what would you say to the women listening that know that they have tendencies to please, know that they have tendencies to stay comfortable, but they know there's a lot in them as well, but they know that they have a knowing. How do they really take that step forward?
I think it's important to disrupt ourselves as much as possible. One of the things that I love to do is travel and get into really different travel situations so that my brain can start to figure out what it feels like to be uncomfortable, right? When we can start to be and crave and stay in the unknown or go towards the unknown and stop having the fear or resist the fear of the unknown, we can break through all kinds of limitations. It doesn't matter what you apply it to. So for me, I do that by traveling, going to different destinations, having different experiences, having things go wrong and figuring out a way out of it. Mm-hmm. That's a very low risk way to do that and to build that muscle. And so that idea of knowing that we're all wired that way, culture has wired us that way. I'll never forget, I was in the airport going through security and a guy was behind me and he said, you know, you'd be so much prettier if you'd smile. I didn't know this guy. Didn't know where he was coming from.
Wow.
Why would I need to smile to make his day better? Like, it was just such a random thing. And yet those kind of microaggressions happen all the time. And we have been like sponges for that and taking that in for so long. So of course we have all of these things that kind of get in our way. It's not a knee-jerk reaction for us to always be bold or to be able to take risks. But we can program ourselves otherwise. We can take control of our own programming and stop being programmed by others. Others, culture, the news, expectations, all of these things, we can choose to say, no, I'm going to program myself. I'm going to create my own destiny, my own experience. And that's where I think we can start to chip away at our own self-imposed limitations.
Mm. Now, Lila, were you always had that bold sense about you? What was your journey, if you will?
It has been a journey. I have not always been this bold. As a matter of fact, if there was something I could have told my teenage self, it would be to have more courage. There's more than one way to skin a cat, which means that there's more than one way to live life. At that time, I was looking at what my parents said, what society said, and I made a lot of bad mistakes that were not really my authentic choices, but I thought, well, I want to please everybody, or I want to make sure that I'm in alignment, or I don't want to lose friends and family by going and, you know, driving my own earth mover in life, right? I was just kind of letting everybody else decide. And I finally said, okay, enough of that. I'm okay with risking standing in my own sovereignty, standing alone, even if that means I lose a community and have to build another one. And so I've had a series of experiences like that where I've had to start again, try something, start again, try something, start again. And over time, I have built the confidence that you see today.
Wow. That's very powerful. And I think it is a journey for most women and men, you know, listening. They don't just turn on a confidence switch, right? It's not just a switch. It's not just this, oh, I'm immediately this. I know for my own self, I had this risk-taking. I was the youngest of three girls. And so I had this risk-taking ability. However, it was coupled with this people-pleasing sense as well. So those two pieces have never been one or the other for me. I've taken bold action. I've been courageous in different moments of my life. When it comes to people and relationships is where the courage and the boldness I've had to work on. Me jumping out of an airplane that was perfectly fine, as they say, for, you know, people are like, why are you jumping out of a plane for skydiving, right? I've done it like three times. And I look at all the different things I've done in terms of boldness, and even in my own life, starting multiple businesses, working through a lot of challenges. But it's that people-pleasing piece, or that, okay, what are they going to think, that creeps in, that sometimes dims women's boldness. So that's a big one, right? That's a big one to kind of unpack. How can those listening that have areas of their life they're bold, but do also have this need to be comfortable with certain people in certain situations, because I don't think it's everywhere, how do they, A, mindful of those moments, and then B, you know, like you said, building that muscle. What can they do first to build that muscle in those particular circumstances?
Very simple. Say no. Find the person.
I love your answers. Say no.
Very simple. Just say no. Yeah. Find the person or the situation or the area where you're like, man, I want to please this person. I want to make sure they're happy. And the next time they ask you something, say no. Just to see what happens. Just say no. Just say no. And see how they react. And that'll be a great test. And the next time they ask, say no. Get used to saying no. And honestly, the truth is, saying no is the hardest thing for us. A lot of times people will accept that. And they'll be like, oh, okay. And sooner or later, just like you train a dog, not that people are dogs, but just like you train a dog, they will learn to stop asking. And a lot of times, just giving yourself that space, and you're retraining everybody else on how to deal with you. Think about when you get a new appliance. You typically have some kind of a user guide or a manual that says, here's how you turn on the light. Here's how you turn on the, yep, put in the batteries, whatever.
Multiple languages too.
Right? Yeah. So what's the user guide for you? And are people adhering to that? Hmm. When you have some kind of a framework for dealing with people, whether it's written or not, that is putting your interests first and what you need to be whole so that you can operate, so that people can leverage you in the way and you can serve the communities that you serve, then things tend to be a little bit easier. You're not always having to make the decision like, should I do what they want or not? Should I put myself first or not? Should I please this person or not? You'll get used to, oh no, this is how a machine works or something works when you're using the user guide and using those guidelines. So I see it like that.
I love that. And I'm so excited that we're having this conversation, Lila. And I'm also so excited for those who don't know that you're going to be one of our keynotes at InvestorCon coming up. If you're living under a rock and you have not heard about our annual conference, InvestorCon is coming up June 1st to 3rd, Orlando, Florida at the beautiful Omni.
And cannot wait.
Cannot wait. And I what I love about what you're going to be speaking about there is all about embracing change. And, right. And how many of us have changed, literally, small changes, big changes, there's always changes. And how do you really embrace those so you actually go from transition to transformation? And again, talk about a user manual or a recipe. You know, sometimes there's no recipe. So I'm so excited. I'm so selfishly excited to hear your keynote talking about that very concept, because that is a key to living life on your own terms and creating wealth and abundance. So, so excited. Do you want to share anything else? Any other teaser, real quick with those listening about your keynote at InvestorCon?
All I can say is come prepared to learn with an open heart, open mind. And if anything, not just for my talk, decide that you're going to take one or two things away and leverage them. I'm a huge fan of not only educating, but also giving people one or two things that they can do that are actionable. And that's really where the magic comes in. Not just being entertained, not just being in community, but then deciding I am going to act. And so if I had to say, what do I stand for? I'm a person who takes ideas and turns them into action and helps people stay accountable to doing so. So that's what you can expect.
Oh, All right, better be there. You could visit investhercon.therealestateinvesther.com. Get your tickets. Go to our website. Be there. All right, I want to go back to leadership because, Lila, what I see so much in our community of women that have a few rentals or a few deals under their belt. They're working part-time in their real estate business. They may be working full-time or they're full-time in this business and they're scaling their portfolio. We talk about leadership a lot. And then they look at us and go, I'm not a leader. I'm not in a corporation. I just have a small business. And they don't necessarily see themselves as leaders. That very thought, I would imagine, is holding people back. Because whether you have, I don't care if you have one contractor, one tenant, one fill in the blank, you're a leader. You're leading your own life ultimately. So how can we shift that paradigm for everyone listening that they do take themselves? You know what I've learned from years of speaking? The right stage doesn't just amplify your message. It builds your credibility. It positions you as a leader people remember. So what sets the top 1% of entrepreneurs apart? Authority. And nothing builds faster than stepping onto the TEDx stage with over 43 million YouTube subscribers. It is the biggest platform for ideas that spread like wildfire. Leader is making this possible. They're the number one company helping people land TEDx talks with over 650 talks booked for their clients. Want in? Head over to leader.co/events to book your free TEDx strategy session. That's leader.co/events. They'll help you refine your message, create a custom plan, and as a bonus, they'll even guarantee your first 50,000 views. Again, that's leader.co/events, leader.co/events. If they see themselves as a leader and then act accordingly, what is a mindset shift or something that you can share that people really start to embrace their leadership?
Sure. So I think it's important to know the difference between a leader and a manager. A lot of times when you say leadership, people say here, manager or supervisor, and that's not the same. A manager or a supervisor helps people complete tasks and get them done in a certain way to move on to the next thing. A leader inspires. A leader transforms. A leader creates opportunity. A leader creates revenue for people. A leader is all of us. We are all leaders. If you're wondering, I don't know if I'm a leader, what's your followership? Who's following you? When you have an idea or you decide to do something, buy a property, who's with you? If you're in an investing group, who's with you? I would argue that all of the women who have decided to put down capital, time, and effort in building a real estate portfolio, I mean, that is the basis for almost every single person who's become multi-million, multi-billionaire. So the challenge is not the fact that they don't have the actions or the portfolio to support leadership or thinking that way. It's the paradigm shift that you talked about of thinking of as a leader, as a manager in a corporation. And the truth is you're a leader in your life. And you're creating revenue and opportunity for people. That's the best kind of leader I can ever think of.
The idea that leadership is either taught or is innate. What are your thoughts on that? Mm-hmm. Meaning, am I born with this and I just develop it and cultivate it? It's a journey. Or is this something that I can actually learn? Because sure. I just don't have it, quite honestly, to this point in my life.
Sure. So I would push back on that and say, you do. A person who says that, I just don't have it. Yeah, you do. You just don't know what it looks like. You just don't know what it looks like. And that's probably because television, culture, movies, people tell you that a narrative that you've chosen to believe that says that leadership looks like something different. So what I would argue is look for opportunities and look for places in your life where you are a leader. You'll find them. Take some time and get quiet and be like, okay, wait a minute. Where, you know, even if it's a leader just in your family or with your friend group or in your community, I guarantee you, if you're an investor, you're a leader. You've got people who are following you. You've got people who are paying you month to month. That is a leader. So you just have to change your narrative that you believe. Instead of taking somebody else's narrative and then trying to overlay it on you saying, well, they said a leader is this and I'm not that sure. I guess I'm not a leader. Instead of doing that, create your own narrative for what a leader is. A leader is somebody who has a portfolio who's creating wealth. And that's me. You get to decide. There's no rules.
The narrative part is a very slippery concept, meaning, and I explain to me what you mean by narrative. I'm assuming what you're meaning, and I'm sure that I'm sure everyone listening is as well. But I want to make sure we're all clear on what you're saying, because this is a very sounds simple, but it's actually very powerful to be mindful of your narrative, what you're saying to yourself, and then how to shift that. So help us understand how you define, you know, the narrative, if you don't mind, and then we'll talk that through.
Narrative is the things that you say to yourself in your head, those repeating thoughts in your head. Those repeating thoughts, this is who I am. You'll know that it's a narrative oftentimes because it happens automatically. So you might be, maybe you're leaving the house and you can't find your keys. Instead of saying, oh, I'll just put my energy into finding the keys. You're saying all this negative stuff. How stupid am I? I can't believe I did this. I should have been home earlier last night. And, you know, I didn't go to bed on time. And you just do all of these negative things, which don't enhance performance, don't help you find your keys. But it's like this narrative in your head. So that's an example of narratives, like that negative talk in our heads. Now, let's talk about the narrative that we're given. Oftentimes, we're given a narrative by television, movies, people that we don't realize. It's subconscious. It's a subconscious thing that all of a sudden we start believing exactly like we see or hear. I'll give you an example. You ever, back when people actually listened to the radio, you ever hear a song and everybody said, oh, that's a good song. You're like, I don't really like it the first one or two times. But after a while, you're like, you know what? That's a good song. And all of a sudden you're singing it. And then 20 years later, you can still remember the lyrics and you never even liked it in the first place. That's an example of a narrative of something that's put into your experience consistently that gets logged into your subconscious mind and now becomes a part of your identity. That's what I mean by narrative.
Yes. And if you've been on this earth for decades, you have an identity, right? How you define yourself, how you see yourself, how you describe yourself to people, especially even at networking events. What do you say? How do you say it? So those listening to this, the narrative is sort of the root cause if you want to shift your confidence and the way you see yourself as a leader. So that's a big one, right? It's not going to be something you do like at 4 o'clock in the afternoon when your kids are getting off the bus. What's my narrative? Let me write it down. This is thought provoking. This is very mindful. This is very intentional. Is there a practice? Is there an exercise? Is there something that everyone listening can do to define what their narrative is today around confidence, around leadership particularly? Because there's probably narratives around everything in our world, but let's get specific because these are the areas we want to have a breakthrough so women can really take control of their finances and grow their wealth and grow themselves. What would be the, you know, suggestions to A, identify the narrative, but B, redefine it because it's big.
Sure. So I can give you an example of what I've done. And one of the things that I've done a handful of years ago, I stumbled onto this idea of a personal offsite. Now, if you're in a corporation or you've worked in a business, you know that people take leadership retreats or they'll take an offsite and they'll bring all of the executives or the board together and they'll say, how did we do last year? How did we do last quarter? And what can we do to move forward towards our goals? I didn't realize that I'd never done anything like that for myself. And so once I learned this idea of a quarterly personal offsite, where you get out of your routine, you get away from everybody that you're with, girlfriends, husband, kids, whatever, and you just sit in a space where you can do deep work on your routines, your habits, taking a look at what things are you carrying? How have you done towards what you're trying to do? What is that narrative? What are the things I heard over and over and over again that aren't actually mine? Once you get quiet and you can start to look at those trends, understanding who your grandparents were, what did they do for a living? What were some of their challenges? What were some of the things that how your family might have experienced money? All of these different things. And you start to do this practice where you are auditing yourself. And you're saying, all right, over the last 90 days, this is what I did. Here's what my trends were. Over the next 90 days, here's what I want to do. And getting quiet in that space, it may not happen the first time, may not happen the second time, but if you can make something like that a routine, you'll figure out your patterns, you'll figure out your narrative, and it'll be authentic to you. That's what I recommend.
I love that. I love that. Something that I do, I need to do the personal offsite on a quarterly basis. So I love that idea. Something I have been consistent with this year in particular is doing a weekly State of the Union. So it's really literally a half hour on a Sunday. It's usually a Saturday morning when I have some quiet space and I take my journal out. I do some kind of, I do some prayer. I do some meditation. I get into the space of just quiet time. But I ask myself, what were the pluses? What worked this week? And what didn't work this week for me? And then I take the negative, like the minuses, because I don't want to end on that because I'm like, just focusing on that will just get me out of, I want to work through that. So then I always think about solutions to those things, whether it's a habit whether it's a way of looking at it, whether I need to ask for support. Because I don't know about you, but I work really hard not just to rely on myself. Because if left up to my own, I'll just rely on myself. And I want to ask for support, ask for, very good example. I feel like my food, one of my state of the unions, I felt like my food intake wasn't, I was eating more snacks. I was eating food that I wasn't my highest and best self. I said, I need to do a cleanse. You know, you get to that point, you're like, I need to do something to reset. So I wrote that down and I said, oh, I think one of my neighbors does a cleanse. She always talks about some cleanse she does. I don't even know what it's called. So I texted her right after my State of the Union, say, hey, Lauren, are you doing this anytime soon? Because if you are, I would really love to do it with you. She's like, actually, I'm planning on doing it next week. Would you like to do it with me? If you order it today, you'll get it in time, the kit. I was like, well, that was cool. But my point is when you stay there and you really say, okay, what's working, what's not, then how do I shift the what's not working? It moves you into action. I took action. I got a cleanse scheduled. I felt great, right, Lila?
Yay!
And I love what you're saying about the 90 days, because weekly is one thing, but to do it on that level is a whole other level to really pull you out of, okay, where am I headed with my personal goals? With growing, we always say we stand for women growing themselves, growing their businesses, and growing their portfolios. So even just using those three pieces and questions, am I growing myself? How's it going growing my business? And how's it going growing my portfolio? If that's what they want to achieve. So I love the personal offsite. Now, let me ask you this. Do you schedule that like a year out? So meaning January 1st or beginning of the year, you schedule those out, or do you schedule them when you need them? I kind of probably know your answer, but I'm curious how you schedule yourself.
Yep. So I always schedule the next one as the last day. So I will start, you know, one in Q1. So the first, you know, 3 months of the year. And then the last day of that particular trip, I'll schedule the next one and the next one. So it's always a ritual. It's ritualized where I am scheduling the next one while I'm on that trip.
Curious, is there a minimum time that you say, okay, it has to be at least 24 hours, one overnight, it has to be not in my house? Like, do you have any kind of rules or standards around it? Because I love that, because I am seriously going to do that. And I would need to have rules because I like to stay into a structure.
plus one. And by that, I mean me too. Yeah. So on my very first one, because I had never done it, I kind of went big and did like a 5-day like soul cleansing journey. Now that I've been doing it for a little while, kind of my benchmarks that I use is at least 3 hours away, at least an overnight, and do it every 3 months.
I always say this, and I think it's worth saying, is that we schedule what we value. You schedule what you value. So if you value, we say we value ourselves and we value time to get quiet and get connected to our confidence and our growth. But yet there's nothing on your calendar on a weekly basis, monthly basis, quarterly basis. The question would be, do you really value yourself? And it's a pill to swallow. I kept saying, yeah, I love myself and I take time for myself. And I looked at my calendar and I was helping everyone. I was doing everything for everyone else. I didn't have one thing on my calendar that was for myself, except probably working out, which is important, but I feel like that's prerequisite. That's like kind of core. So that's the key. I want everyone to take out their calendars as after this podcast episode and put something on the calendar that schedules yourself so that you can build towards the confident person you are and the leader that you are. Because sometimes it's just quiet time, right, Lila? I don't know about you, but sometimes it's just giving yourself space to get connected to your greatness.
I couldn't agree more. And oftentimes it's also because we don't associate quiet, calm, clear with productivity and abundance. Most of us, including myself, for a long time, and if I don't check myself, I do it again, we're addicted to stress culture. And by that, I mean, we see value in constantly busy schedules, constantly being booked back to back. And a lot of us are so used to being in that elevated state that even when we aren't required to be, it could be like, I don't know, something you're doing with girlfriends, you still tend to overlap that stress feeling onto it. And you know that because you may have even started to believe that that feeling of reacting from stress is your personality. A lot of us say, I'm type A. What that typically means is I'm addicted to stress and I use stress energy to get everything done. And it makes my ego feel good. And I constantly promote it. You can tell if you promote it by, if you ever met a stranger and the first thing you tell them is, oh my gosh, this week I'm in LA, next week I'm in New York, next week I'm in whatever. And you're like, I don't even know you.
Yeah, then you're excited.
I don't care about your schedule. So noticing that you're addicted to that stress culture and that stress energy, most of us are, is why we don't take the time for calmness and creativity and making that space. If we were to, and this is my last point on this, if we were to connect that quiet space and creativity with the same energy as closing a transaction or getting a check, you always have time to get a check. You always have time to close a transaction. Never have a hard time scheduling that. Well, the thing that helps do that transaction and create that abundance effortlessly is when you're in a state of calm, which is when you create and you act. In your example, you said, hey, I was on this, I took this time on Saturday morning. I had this idea. I acted on it and things happened very quickly and easily. You didn't have to stress about it. You have to write it down. You didn't have to plan to do the cleanse. You just did it because you were in a space of calm and you were in a space where you could create. So if you associate taking that time for yourself with dollars, with cash, with abundance, more than you could ever imagine, you'll make it happen.
Oh, I love that. I love that so much to continue to dive into. So that's why I'm so excited, Lila, that you're going to be at InvestorCon June 1st to 3rd. I'm so excited to personally meet you as well. So where can everyone listening learn more about you and follow you on your journey?
Oh, so lilajones.com, LilaHJones.com is the best place to connect with me. My newsletter always has tips on what I'm doing to help women, coach women, enable women. So you can subscribe to that and we are connected.
Awesome. Thank you so much for being on our show and cannot wait to see you in June.
Yay.
If you enjoyed this podcast and want to receive updates on our next interviews, go to our website, therealestateinvestor.com. There, you can subscribe to our show, become part of our investor community, and get updates on upcoming episodes.
If you like our show, please share with other women who would benefit. And don't forget to leave us a rating on iTunes. We'd really appreciate it. And as always, we encourage you to take one action as a result of today's show and put it into motion so you can live both a financially free and balanced life. Thanks for spending time with us.
Ciao.